This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
So the questions at the walk-in were the same. What do you do when you're 19 and your father dies suddenly? And then what do you do when life revisits you at the age of 33 and your husband dies? And then what do you do when you have a son that you love terribly dearly and he is special needs? I don't know the answers, but Mary McHale tried to find them through living that what do you do life. And she joins me in studio this morning because a couple of days ago, her book, Finding Your Cape, was released. Mary McHale, good morning. Welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Your timing of this book, I don't think it was on purpose. But given the fact that we're talking on Wednesday, on the 29th, with Bell Let's Talk, of which you've been a part of in the past.
I have, yes.
Is going to be happening. So all of this somehow is, well, the gods must be at work here. I will say that Mary McHale comes into the studio, and when I hold this book to my nose, I can tell how such a short time has elapsed since it was printed, because you released it on the 23rd.
I did, yes. I released it January 23rd. It's available worldwide on Amazon, and it's already hit number one in about five categories on Amazon.
Get out.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that nice?
It's incredible.
Wow. What does that feel like when you put your head on the pillow and go to sleep at night?
I don't think I've processed it yet, to be honest. This whole project has taken about 18 months, and every step along the way was uncharted territory, from writing the book to figuring out how to publish it myself and get it on Amazon and now release it. So I'll probably process it in about 6 months.
So can we go to the beginning? Because
sure.
I'm looking at the notes that are here that are wrapped around Finding Your Cape. And you know, the first thing that obviously that is here is a father who when you're 19 dies suddenly. Now, am I allowed to ask how he died?
Yes, he passed away from a heart attack.
Okay.
While watching TV on our couch, actually.
Were you there at
my
the time?
My mom and I both were. Yep. The story is in the book. It was, you know, jarring to be woken up with my mom on the phone to 911 and then the ambulance coming and then following them. I grew up in Summerland, so following the ambulance to the hospital in Penticton and then getting the completely unexpected news that he had passed away immediately. And at the age of 19, it was such a shift in my life. You know, I had just graduated high school in Summerland and was still trying to figure out my way. And so to lose such a huge influence, it definitely pivoted my life.
You tight?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fathers and daughters.
Yeah.
Mothers and sons.
Yes.
you followed a core, you followed pattern.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Growing up, we always listened to the radio together. He loved the news, and he instilled that love in me and watching the news every night. And then after he passed away, it was definitely one of the huge influences on why I ended up going to BCIT and going into journalism.
Right. And ultimately working for Son of Him.
Yeah.
In Penticton. again, that was why I was alluding. You have some sense of what we're about as far as Bell Let's Talk.
Because oh, absolutely.
This is a huge program. So talk to me, first of all, about this man, your father, who is such an important figure in your life.
He was a high school teacher in Summerland. And the book, Finding Your Cape, a huge part of the cape and that metaphor came to me because he actually built a life-sized Superman that flew.
And what?
Yeah.
No.
He was a model plane enthusiast, and he always wanted to, you know, excite people and get his students involved and wanted to do something interesting and different. So, yeah, he was able to build a Superman that was hand-launched and then flew as if it was a model plane. And so Superman became, you know, a really cool symbol in our life. My sister and I got Superman tattoos in memory of him. And he really, without me even knowing it, and I think without even him knowing it, started that stirring of the idea of a cape that no matter how outlandish your dream is or what you're going through, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can achieve the unexpected, as in building a flying Superman. And
because not only Superman, but also Batman, they always took their cape and sort of held it in front of them. It was the cape was sort of held out there as the shield.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, that's really woven into your DNA.
It really is. It really is. And both my parents were immigrants. Like, my mom flew over from England with her wedding cake on her lap, and they moved here.
She what?
Yeah.
She flew from England with her wedding cape, her cake,
yes,
balanced on her lap.
Yeah, and they got married 2 days later in Victoria, and then...
They obviously met in England?
Yeah. And then my dad came to Canada and saw a bright future, and then his fiance followed him, and then they got married. And
what an amazing story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they always showed me that, you know,
be
no matter
brave,
and that anything
chance
was possible.
Yeah.
Like, why not me? You know?
Yeah. Unreal. Now, another piece of your life, because as the notes are on the book, at the age of 33, you lose a husband.
Yes, I became a widow. My husband, Jeremy, who actually worked for your sister station, Easy Rock, in Penticton, and was a huge mental health advocate, committed suicide in 2017.
I don't know what you do with that. What do you do? What do you do?
I mean, it was something,
because he was an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
He was a champion of.
Mm-hmm.
He was a voice for, and then ultimately lost his voice and lost his cape.
He had struggled for years. In hindsight, you know, once he was diagnosed a few years before his death,
diagnosed with
anxiety and depression.
Okay.
He was able to look back and see, you know, it probably started when he was a teenager, but it wasn't something talked about, and he didn't know.
Foundry didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when you look at the work that Foundry is doing right now in this community, you know, dealing with kids that from 15 to 24, or kids and families, but Foundry could have rescued him.
And that's why, I mean, Foundry now exists in Penticton as well. And the Yes Project was a huge part of that. And Jer was a huge advocate for the Yes Project. And then I became a big supporter of them because, I mean, you know, he didn't have those tools. And then, you know, life follows you as an adult. And so when he was diagnosed, it was unexpected. And then, you know, he did everything he could. He actually came out about having anxiety and depression for Bell Let's Talk Day, mm-hmm, a few years before his passing. And he worked tirelessly to stop the stigma of, you know, we don't talk about that, it's taboo. He was like, well, I'm going to be vulnerable and I'm going to talk about it because I feel like this needs a voice. And then we were inundated and totally surprised by how many other people were saying,
me too.
Thank you. Me too. People in our office, our friends, people in the community. You know, he was always very open about it. And I also have a YouTube channel, and we filmed, you know, hundreds of videos on that together. And he just didn't want people to feel like they were alone. And he didn't want people to be suffering in silence. So he worked really hard as an advocate. And then he joined the Canadian Mental Health Board in Penticton, all the while still very privately struggling and trying everything he could.
And could you see that? Could you know it? Did you know it? Or did he even hide it from you?
Hide?
That he was struggling as much as he was. Was it an internal struggle, or was it very public at the dinner table, mm-hmm, between the two of you?
It was very, it was something he could not hide.
Right.
You know, in the last,
you knew
say,
him
year
well
and
enough
a half.
By then. Right, yeah.
And he had scares for about a year before his passing. You know, I'd be at work and he'd call me and say, you need to come home.
No.
I don't know what I'm going to do. And our son was obviously home with him. So it wasn't something that he was hiding. And then I was taking on that role of trying to, I basically thought of anything in his life can just be white noise. You just focus on getting healthy. And I would, you know, just try to make anything as easy as possible for him, taking on that like caregiver role.
The voice is Mary McHale, who worked with our company at Sun FM in Penticton. And after tragedy and death visited her twice, as well as the challenge of being a widow and a single mom, she decided she needed to find her cape. Part of it is found in the book Finding Your Cape, which was released and published just a couple of days ago on the 23rd. She's in our studio to have a conversation. We'll be back with Mayor McHale right after this.
This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
So on the 29th, coast to coast to coast, every radio station in the Bell Media chain, CTV television network, Associated print sponsors are all going to be involved in something Bell Let's Talk as we work together as a huge organization. 77,000 employees from coast to coast to coast, but everybody will have one focus on Wednesday, and that is to drive social media, to drive our radio stations, to drive the CTV television network, ultimately to raise funds in the support of mental health projects, conversations across the country. Among them, just the other night, a week ago tomorrow night, I will have I had the pleasure of being at Foundry here in Kelowna and delivering a $15,000 check from the Bell Media Fund with the aim and the objective of funding now Foundry Mobile. And they are actually retaining and building a mobile Foundry organization to be able to go out into communities like Lake Country and to be able to go to Summerland and be able to go to Peachland and all the rest of it and talk to youth that are outside the bounds of the city of Kelowna. Anyway, all of that, part of a conversation with Mayor McHale, who worked with our sister station in Penticton. Father died suddenly at 19. Husband committed suicide at 33. And suddenly she finds herself as a single mother, a widow. And the story is even more complicated because her son has special needs. Thomas is his name.
Yes.
Mayor, talk to me about this boy.
Thomas is 8. He, you know, it's interesting you say single mom. It just made me flash back to the morning after Jeremy took his life. I remember the first thing I thought when I woke up was, oh my God, I'm a single mom. Mm-hmm. Like something I never had anticipated. So Thomas was born deaf and he was fitted with his first teeny tiny little hearing aids.
Cochlear?
He had hearing aids when he was 4 months, and then at the age of 3, he got one cochlear implant.
Right. Changed his life?
It has been life-changing. And we thought that the cochlear implant would help him start to develop, but it didn't. And we saw him start to regress and regress and regress even more. So a few months after his cochlear implant, he was diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. So Thomas is nonverbal, autistic, and then he has one hearing aid and one cochlear implant. And to be honest, getting that autism diagnosis was a bit of a relief because it was that last missing piece of the puzzle.
Suddenly you're saying, now I know why.
Now there's help.
Yeah.
You know, now there's people who can help us get our boy back and help him develop. And that has been incredible for his development. He is in, you know, regular school and he's thriving and it's not without its complications, obviously. But Thomas has been my biggest teacher. He's made me more patient than I ever could have expected. And, I mean, he's been a big inspiration for Finding Your Cape and a big inspiration for my healing, being a widow. You know, people always say to me, how have you managed to go on? How did you get out of bed in the morning? I'm like, I didn't have a choice.
I had a son to feed and,
yep. You know.
And to look after.
Yeah. And to now be the two parents. So not just be the mom, but now I'm also the dad and giving him enough love and nurturing and support to thrive himself and, you know, find his own cape.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. We all have moments in time when life dumps something into our lap.
Absolutely.
But I'm sure there's a couple of times that you looked up and said, okay, I've had more than my share. Can you let some of this? Can you let somebody else have a share now?
Well, they kept saying like, "Oh, you're not given anything you can't handle." I'm like, I think I'm good. I think I've proven I'm strong enough. Thank you, everybody. But I do honestly believe that my journalism background has led me to this book, and also to having this YouTube channel and this social media platform, so that I am able to help other people. You know, this book isn't just about being a widow or being a single mom. it can help anyone who's been through anything in their life that, you know, it just doesn't go as planned. We can all, like you said, we can all relate to that. And I get messages all the time from people who feel like they're alone. They just see that highlight reel on social media. And I just want people to know that, A, they're not alone. B, someone has been through what they've been through and they can help them. And that no matter what it is that you are facing, it is possible to course correct. Yeah, and it is possible to thrive.
So talk to me now about this book. I'm holding it in my hand. I warmly said, you know, it's so fresh that that when I fan the pages, I can smell printer's ink. So it's hardly had time to dry. And you're out into the market carrying the book. Was the book done to be a process of catharsis? I mean, was this a cathartic undertaking?
It didn't start that way, but it absolutely was, because I had to relive some of the darkest moments of my life. And
which one normally wouldn't want to go to anymore.
No, although I am a huge advocate for processing your experience, and I say, like, feel the feels, and I'm a huge advocate for therapy. I think that's one of the reasons why I've been able to grieve and write this book and, you know, deal with the hand that I've been held rather than just suppressing it. Because I think if you suppress it, it's going to rear eventually. Like, feelings don't just go away, unfortunately, as much as we'd love them to. So writing the book was very therapeutic, expensive, because I had to go to therapy a lot. Like, I would write.
Whoa, hang on. You're writing a book, which is supposed to be therapy.
It was. It definitely helped my grief. I didn't anticipate that going in, but I feel so much further along in the grief process.
So write a chapter, therapist. Write a chapter, therapist.
Go back to old journal, therapist.
Right.
Yes. It was incredible. It was a great process. I worked with a local editor here in Kelowna, Simone Blaze, and she was good at keeping me on a timetable. She would give me a lot of deadlines, and then she would, you know, ask me to expand.
Demand for performance. Otherwise, exactly. You could disappear down the rabbit hole and never come out.
I think it would just never finish. You know, there was right. At some point where it was like, the manuscript is done. We need to, you know, go to print, and we need to take it to the next level. Right.
You said the word journal. Were you a journalist along the way? And that, to me, I'm not a journalist, and my memory is certainly faulty. Until I end up in conversation with somebody, and then all these things come flooding back. So there is this process of recall from the dusty shelves. But for you, were you a journalist? You know, keeping a scribbler that you filled with notes.
I really recommend that to a lot of people. If you're someone who feels like your mind is just going and going and going, and you can't shut it off, or you can't sort of compartmentalize your thoughts and come to a decision, I'm a huge person. I love to just open a page, and I call it brain dump. So I just write without thinking, without looking over what I've written, and just get it down on paper to get it out of your mind. And when I was going through, you know, Jeremy was struggling with his mental health. But something that a lot of people don't talk about is then being that caregiver. So it was really difficult for me to try and support him. So I didn't want to show him that. So I used journals as my form of, you know, catharsis, basically, or therapy. And I would open a journal. Sometimes I'd write 10 pages. I remember writing 30 pages at once and just writing and writing. And I found it was a great way for me to organize my thoughts, you know, make a plan of action.
And feel better about tomorrow ahead of you?
I think so. And also, I kept visualizing and manifesting where I wanted my life to be. Like, it is very difficult now, but it's not always going to be here. So what am I, like, what's my end game, or where do I want to work towards? And then I would slowly be able to put those steps in motion. And, you know, my girlfriends were great. My family was great. But at some point, you don't want anyone else's opinion. You just want to know, like, what do I actually want? And I really found a journal helpful. And I think, I mean, I recommend it to everybody.
Right. So as Jeremy is struggling with, he's joined the mental health board. He's an advocate for, he speaks to, but you're very aware that he's still in trouble, that we aren't getting to where we need to go. And he takes his own life. Did you spend time looking at yourself in the mirror and feeling that somehow you'd failed?
Oh, absolutely. I spent the last 2 years of his life feeling like his life was my responsibility. and that it was my responsibility to keep him alive. And a huge reason why I wanted to write that book is we need to get rid of that stigma that
you didn't fail. You
no,
didn't fail him.
No.
Right. You're not responsible.
And it's no one's responsibility but that person themselves. And I think we need to reduce that stigma or eliminate it altogether that it's the caregiver's job. I get messages from all over the world every single week from people who are either caring for someone who is suicidal, be it a child, a friend, a parent, a spouse, or someone who has just lost someone to suicide, blaming themselves and saying, like, what could I have done? And I got that question a lot after Jer passed away, saying, what did you miss? Yeah. What signs should I be looking for?
But everybody asks that. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had Tom Budd sitting where you're sitting, mm-hmm. both of his sons committing suicide. One at a school college that he was going to in Calgary, the other at University of Victoria. And Tom Budd to this day will tell you that he spent so much time, first of all, blaming the school in Calgary. How come you didn't see? His son comes home and they're out on the driveway playing basketball and shooting hoops. And he now looks at himself in the mirror and says, how come I didn't see? Because self-blame becomes the natural response. What did I miss?
And mental health is such a disease. Like, we need to remember that. If someone is suffering in silence and they don't want you to know, you're not going to know. You know, people say, like, what was the last conversation you had with Jeremy? And, like, how did you miss it? Did you know he was going to? Of course I didn't know he was going to kill himself that day. Yeah. I wouldn't have left. I wouldn't have left the house that day. We had a mundane conversation about autism funding, you know? So, no, I think, like, a big reason why I wanted to write this book was that I think there's too much judgment surrounding mental health in general. As well, you know, we don't really look to the caregiver, and I want to give them something that they can look to and that they can find their own cape and their own strength.
Voice is Mara McHale in studio this morning because 2 days ago she released her book, Finding Your Cape, How to Course Correct, How to Achieve Greatness When Things Don't Go As Planned. And lordy, lordy, things haven't gone exactly as planned in her life. When we come back, I want to talk about all those calls. I want to talk about those emails. I want to talk about the overwhelming understanding that Mayor has, as we have here at Bell Media, that this is a conversation that needs to be had more often and isn't. And I want to ask why we're afraid to have that conversation. Back right after this.
This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
Conversation this morning with Mayor McHale, who has produced a fabulous book. I've had a chance to thumb through the pages. I'm going to beat her up and insist that the copy that she gave me to look at cannot leave the studio. But in turn, I will continue to promote and suggest. Is that fair?
Well, I'm not going to, like, you know, encourage violence.
You want a
Phil,
wrist twist?
Don't make me take you. Don't make me take you.
Anyway,
you can have the book.
Finding Your Cape is written by a young woman who has had more than her share of life's tragedy dropped upon her shoulders. Father dies at 19, a husband who commits suicide at 33, a son who has special needs, born deaf, but then discovered laterally that he's also autistic. And somewhere, somehow, this woman found the cape that she wrapped around herself that's allowed herself to continue and go forward. But I'm intrigued by the fact of social media, the internet being mm-hmm. what it is. You're swamped might be an overstatement. That's my choice of words. You didn't use that word. But a preponderance of people who are now contacting you and looking to you for help. Are you shocked and surprised at the number of people who are contacting you to say either I've been thinking about suicide or my husband or my brother or my son? Are you shocked by the volume or the amount of the number of lives that seem to have been ended through mental illness? Did that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me. It just makes me so incredibly sad. I think doing the work with Bell Let's Talk Day, when I worked at Sun, you know, they do say it's like sometimes it's 1 in 5, right?
Yeah, I've heard that.
So that doesn't surprise me. It just makes me
so 20% of 33 million people. Yeah. We're 36 million now. And if you walk down the street, you know, every fifth person may go through an episode in their life that will cause them at some point in time to begin to contemplate ending that life.
We were surprised when Jeremy first went public with his mental health, but now, so many years later, unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
No.
And has it been ever thus? Do you know? Do you have, and that's one of the things that I want to ask of some experts, but are we at a stage societally where the pressures we place on the individual, are we at a stage societally where inability to make rent, inability to feed a family, inability to, you know, buy a pair of shoes when I need a pair of shoes, inability, I'm having to make a choice between gas in my van so that I can go to work or food on my table. It just seems that while the beehive that we're building here is magnificent and it's sort of like the golden castles rising on the hill, the golden castle is there, but people in the valley are living in darkness, and it just feels like the pressures of everyday life today are so much greater than they were.
And I think we are seeing the juxtaposition more because of social media.
Mm-hmm.
I am someone who really has an issue with the highlight reel on socials, so people who only show all the amazing things. I don't follow those accounts. I don't want to see those perfectly curated,
their
you know,
lives
filtered.
Are perfect. Mine is such shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we've all been there where we're scrolling Facebook and then we start to feel less about ourselves and worse when actually we were having kind of an okay day. So that is something that I talk about in the book, being very mindful about who you follow on social media, why you follow them, and if it's not making you feel great, you can block, you can unfollow, you can mute to take back your social media so that you're only following things that lift you up. Or also just get off your phone, you know, like if there's triggering days. So for me, you know, after I lost my dad, Father's Day was very difficult until we had Thomas. And then after Jeremy took his life, Father's Day was difficult again. So I just choose to not be on social media on Father's Day and just pretend it's any Sunday. Because to me, that's the healthy thing to do, you know, same with Mother's Day.
Or you could have a Facebook page like I do, and I haven't been there in 8 months.
Well, that's not an option for me.
People, no, I get that. But people say to me, you know, I sent you. I sent you. No, whatever. I say, listen, if you don't listen to my radio show, but I haven't gone to my Facebook page in
mm-hmm.
8 months,
mm-hmm.
I should just cancel it. I don't even know why it still exists because I don't go there anymore.
So I think that is difficult because we just, you know, if you're already feeling down and then that's all you're seeing on your phone is that all you're seeing is people who are thriving and doing really well. So that's why I've been very open on my YouTube channel vlogging and showing, like, I show myself crying. I show myself having a hard day and grieving. And the message I get resoundingly is like, thanks. You're normal. I just want to see that. I don't want to see someone, you know, perfect.
Are our smartphones, is social media tearing away at the very fabric of our civilization, which is the family? Everything that we are in North America was built on the family. Everything that happened in Europe was built on the family. And that is the underpinning of society, whether you're Chinese, whether you're Russian, whether you're British, whether you're Canadian, whether you're American, the foundation is family. And it seems to me that that our smartphones and social media are tearing away at the very fabric of that underpinning of our society.
I believe you can choose how you want to use your phone. And I believe how you can choose how you want to use social media. I have a group called the Marathoners, which is, you know, a take on mayor.
Isn't that clever?
Because I always say life's not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Right.
And we have an online community of about 1,500 people, and they're from all over the world. And they are always saying, like, this is the safest group on the internet. This is the group that makes me feel less alone. So I think there can definitely be positives where if you're struggling, you can find a group that you connect with. Or if you feel isolated in your small community, you can go online and say, like, okay, there are people like me. There are people who are struggling or thriving or who have the same goals as me. That aspect, I think, is really positive. So, you know, in the group, there'll be someone who comments saying, I just had a miscarriage. And then, you know, other women will comment and say, you know, really empathetic responses. And they'll also, you know, give some advice or, I mean, anything from like makeup tips to whatever it is. But I don't think it has to be. I think you can choose how you want social media to affect your life. And you just have to be very careful with it.
I have to be disciplined.
Absolutely.
And I think that we become habituated, habituated. That's the better word.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, you know, you go to a party. There's 50 people in a house at a house party, and during the course of that evening, how many of them reach into their pocket, reach into their purse, reach into their hip pocket, pull out their phone, and check and make sure that nobody's trying to get a hold of them? They're in a group of people where they're having face-to-face, eye-to-eye conversations, and somehow the conversation that might be happening on that phone becomes as important or maybe more important than the face-to-face that they're having. I find that rather... Scary overstates it, but concerning.
Disrespectful, too.
Concerning.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. So, Mayor McHale's in our studio. We're going to take one quick break, then we'll finish off this conversation. It's been absolutely fascinating. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you that Finding Your Cape by Mayor McHale, How to Course Correct. I like that word.
Yeah.
Was that your word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How to Course Correct. How to Achieve Greatness When Things Don't Go As Planned. How many of us have a life when things don't go exactly as planned? We'll be back with her right after this.
This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
In my hand, I have a copy of Finding Your Cape, written by Mayor McHale after the death of her father, the suicide of her husband, and a son who is special needs, autism, as well, born profoundly deaf. So Mary McHale had more than her share of life challenge on her plate. But as her husband committed suicide, started looking for a thing to do, a way to find her way through it all. And Finding Your Cape was released 2 days ago at a book launch. Who did you write this book for? I mean, earlier I alluded to the fact that it was your own need to involve yourself in some sort of a cathartic process. And as you pour your heart, soul, and all that stuff running around in the canyons of your mind out onto the page, you weren't writing it for you, or were you just writing it for you? Who was it written for?
I was very mindful, even down to the cover design. I wanted it to be something that was accessible, so you could pick it up in an airport, and it's not just like, save your life, you know, you could do better. It's, you know, very like a calm cover, and anyone would feel comfortable reading it. But I wrote it for anyone who just feels like they want more out of their life, whether they're a widow, or they've been divorced, or they're in a toxic job, or a toxic relationship, or they're having some health struggles, or they just feel like life isn't going as planned, which I think everyone can relate to.
We all have hopes and dreams.
I wanted this book to be as relatable as possible and to be not a passive read. The entire time as I was writing it, I wanted to make sure that it had very actionable advice. So many of the chapters end with a section that's called Finding Your Cape. And it's some actionable tips and some things to think about, or some journaling points that you could write about. I really wanted anyone of any age, of any life circumstances, to be able to read the book and then work to find their own cape. Because as you can imagine, being a widow and a single mom of a child with special needs, to get to this point, I've put in a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, therapy, self-work, changes in my life, and I want people to know that if you put in the work, you can create the life you deserve.
Did you have trouble finding a therapist?
Well, Jeremy and I started seeing this therapist 2014, and I still see her.
Okay. So she is someone that you...
She is wonderful.
Right, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's thanked in the book.
because you know, I mean, I went through... I mean, Dan's made reference every once in a while to the variety of marriages in my life, and I've been involved in the marital counseling process, and discovered that just because somebody recommends a counselor to you, that they come in a variety of shades, they come in with a variety of skill set, they come with a variety of talents. And you just keep looking till you find the one that feels comfortable for you.
And that's the key, right? Don't give up. If you and your therapist don't jive, look for another one.
I'm intrigued. Audiobook, hardcover, paperback, and electronic book. So
So
this is available to those Kindle Kobau readers.
Yes, it's available on Kindle right now, and the audiobook should be out next month on Audible.
Right. You narrating your own book?
Yes.
Look at
a studio in my bedroom closet.
That was almost a hysterical laugh.
I'm not kidding, because it's so ridiculous. That's why, because it's so much. You know, you do what you got to do. I want to get that audiobook out.
Yeah, because, I mean, I quite frankly don't. I mean, I get audiobooks when I've been on trips. I actually go down to Mosaic and stumble through all the audiobooks. It, when you're out in the middle of the prairies somewhere or wherever, it's a good thing to do. So I'm intrigued by the fact that you're
or if you're just busy. Like, I listen to them in the shower while I'm making dinner, making Thomas's lunch, driving around town. Like, it's just a good, productive way. It also keeps you off your phone if you're trying to, you know, not just scroll your phone.
Right. Mayor McHale is, the moment she leaves the studio, she's going downstairs to talk to the people at Mosaic Books about carrying her book. If you live in Kelowna and you're listening to this broadcast, I suggest that you phone Mosaic and say that you want to be advised.
Yes.
You want to be advised when her book arrives there at Mosaic.
But it's on Amazon right now.
I know that. I support local.
Okay.
I have a hate on for Amazon.
I love them. Thank you, Amazon.
Mayor McHale, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you for coming in and spending this time with us this morning.
Thank you.
Truly great.
This has been the Early Edition Podcast. Catch the Early Edition from 6 to 9 a.m. on AM 1150 and online at am1150.ca.